Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, dancers, writers, musicians, athletes, comics, you name it. Folks who are center stage, backstage, on camera, or behind the scenes. Sit back and listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome again to the Rising from the Ashes edition of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden. For many years, we have seen Mike Ricigliano's sports cartoons in the Baltimore Sun papers, dramatizing stories with the Baltimore Orioles and Ravens and other sports teams in the area. He also drew cartoons for Cracked Magazine for many years. We had a great time talking about reading Mad Magazine growing up, how he got his foot in the door at Cracked, coming to Baltimore and lampooning Robert Irsay with a life-size papier-mâché statue, his illustrating some of the greatest Baltimore and Maryland sports memories for the past 40 years. He and his wife are also expecting twin grandchildren to be born any day now, so congratulations to the Ricigliano family and all of our best wishes. He also runs Toon Trivia on his Facebook page several times a week. If you would like to participate, add him as a friend. He's a hell of a nice guy. Subscribe for free at www.foulplayersradio.com or listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Cast, Deezer, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Index, Overcast, Castro, CastBox, or PodFriend. Or you can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The Foul Players of Perryville are now booking murder mystery shows for the late summer and fall of 2021. Indoor or outdoor venues, trains, boats, office parties, fundraisers, or just for the heck of it. FoulPlayersPerryville@yahoo.com is our email address. Our phone number is 443-600-0446. Or if you're interested in more information, www.foulplayersofperryville.com. And now for our bad joke of the week. You know, I've been catching a lot of heat for my puns lately. You know, I've been putting a lot of hard work into them, and I really wanted to see if they were any good. You know, without a hostile audience breathing down my neck, threatening to beat me up over how bad they were. So I wrote 10 puns. I entered 10 puns in a contest to see which would win. But no pun intended. Again, I am so sorry. We'll be back with Mike Ricigliano right after these words.
Howdy, it's Matt Gwynn here, popping in to let you know about the adventures of the albino rhino. It's a show Frank the Giraffe here, my co-host James Godwin, and myself put on for you guys twice a week. Every Wednesday, we talk to a comedian, and every Friday, we call it Freak Yeah Friday. The show itself is not safe for work, and that freak is definitely a different word. I just don't know what podcast you're going to be listening to this promo on, and I don't want to, start screaming explicatives while you're sitting in your office, if you're lucky enough to have been able to go back to the work that you did before inside of an office or whatever, you know? But we go on an adventure twice a week, and it's a good time because we get to sit down and talk to some really cool people. And I enjoy it because, you know, I'm just curious little albino who likes to get to know folks, you know? You can find us a couple ways, actually multiple ways, really. Man, there's a lot of different ways to find us. You can find us through our central hub, which is www.albinorhino.me. It's the website. Find me on. And then, you know, the podcast, you can find the videos on YouTube. Search for Adventures of the Albino Rhino. Also linkable from our website. And you can also find us through Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Radio Public, and Spotify. That's right. We're on the same place Joe Rogan is. Granted, we're not the Joe Rogan Experience. But you know what I mean? We're there. So give us a listen. Promise you won't be dissatisfied. And enjoy your day.
going on, minions? Mike here for Misery Point Radio, and you're listening to the Coast to Coast Power Hour on the SJ Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, what the F is a Coast to Coast Power Hour? Well, my uneducated and uninformed friend, the Coast to Coast Power Hour is a Borg-like collective of epic podcasters from epic podcasts that have all come together to discuss the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, random awesomeness, stuff like that. Trust me, you need this in your life. For more information on this show and all the shows on the Coast to Coast Power Hour, as well as on the SJ Network, reach out to publicist Steve Joyner at www.s-j-network.com or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. No need to thank me. I'm just out here, you know, changing lives.
What's Your Effin' Binge is a podcast brought to you by Chris, Anchor, and Spotify. And what we talk to our guest about is what they're currently binge-watching on TV. And what we do is we like to take a different approach. I don't want to know what the name of the show is that they're going to talk about before they come on. I have to actually guess it. So I ask them who, what, when, where, why, and try to figure out what it is that they're watching. A lot of times I'm able to guess it, and sometimes I'm not, and that's fine. That adds to the comedy of the show. We like to bring our guest on, whether they're a model or an actress or producer or musician, and just let them have a platform to be able to tell everybody what they have coming up next, and also entertain everybody with what's worth watching. So I hope everybody tunes in for the next episode of What's Your Effin' Binge. Thanks. It's Chris.
Michael Rossigliano, it's wonderful to have you on the show today. I've been, like I said, I've loved your cartoons forever, and you've really given me quite a few good laughs over the years, and you know, with all the Orioles and Ravens and everything that you've done. So welcome to the show. It's really nice to have you. I'm glad you agreed to do this.
Yeah, thank you, Michael, for inviting me on. It's really great. I don't do a lot of these. I'm more visual than anything else, so it's just kind of fun to chat with you. I think it'll be a great time.
So this all began for you, as you told me that you're originally from Brooklyn, New York, correct?
Born in Brooklyn, New York, yes.
Okay.
And then I grew up on Long Island for most of my life, and I went to college at Buffalo State College. That's how I ended up in Buffalo. And I went to be an art teacher, but I started doing cartoons for the paper, at Buff State, which is called The Record. And I found that I really loved doing it. And so that's what I ended up pursuing.
So were you one of those kids kind of born with a pen in your hand, or was it something you developed an interest in later on?
I like to draw, but I'm really like you, Michael, probably, I was a huge fan of Mad magazine. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
I knew all the artists in Mad. I loved Don Martin and his zany sound effects and all that stuff. So I'm a child of Mad magazine. My drawing style and my writing style had a lot of its roots in Mad.
Right. Did you see, I think it was Al Jaffe just turned 100?
Yes, I saw that. That's amazing. And of course, Mort Drucker passed away within this past year, I think over a year and a half. So yeah, a lot of those artists that, were with Mad are in that kind of age group of guys, and all just brilliant creators,
When I was in elementary school, I used to bring my notebook, my textbook, and my Mad magazines to class all the time. And my teacher kind of had a drawer full of things like they had in A Christmas Story with the chattering teeth and the all the toys. And they were probably my whole collection of Mad magazines were in there.
Sure. And I have the Mads and the chattering teeth and all. I love all those kind of goofy, crazy toys, too. That's another passion of mine. So
that's really something else. And the thing, I believe it was Al Jaffe that always did the back cover.
Yes.
And it was always a big poster that it was always like the back cover, and it would say something, and you would fold it and make almost like a completely different picture.
Exactly. He was among other things in that magazine. I guess he was probably best known for that fold in back cover that changed the entire you know, aspect of the cartoon by just folding it in. You know, it was great stuff.
Right, right. And it, you know, that was, I think, something that was Mad Magazine, I think, especially for boys, was like a rite of passage. You know, everybody, you know, whether you looked at it for a little while or really stayed with it, you looked at it at least for some part of your life growing up.
Yeah. And it also was like, you know, for a lot of people, self included, you know, your first real taste of satire, you know, as mm-hmm. a kid, you know, you, you really got to know what satire was. And you, you know, you look back on it now and you think, well, there's more sophisticated forms of satire, but for its time, it was very sophisticated for satire and mm-hmm. putting that in people, you know.
Very much so, very and, much so.
And politically too, you know, besides its kind of zany humor, it had, you know, a lot of political kind of satire involved in it. It was my roots, no doubt.
No kidding. No kidding. So you ended up writing actually for Cracked, which was a very similar kind of magazine.
Yes. So it's very funny. So I did all this cartoon work in college at Buff State, and I even did a cartoon. I did as much cartooning as I could. I did editorial cartooning. I did a little bit of sports cartooning. I did a kind of a Mad Magazine-y type of feature in there. And I did a comic strip called The Beast That Ate Buffalo, which was about a tuna casserole that came from food service and grew to be like 100 feet and would eat college administrators. So it was kind of like a sci-fi, you know, editorial cartoon that ran every week. And, you know, mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun to do. But anyway, at that point, I was like, got out of college and I wanted to get in this field somehow. So I applied at MAD and they said, you know, there's already a staff of artists and, you know, you still have to kind of perfect your style and whatever. So they suggested I maybe get on a newspaper at some point. And that was a little tough to do. So I wrote to Cracked and I ended up writing to them and saying, look, I love this field. I'd like to kind of get involved in it. And they said, well, we don't know if we could use someone like you. And I ended up like sending them every day, Michael, some article of something that I owned. I would mm-hmm. mail it down to Florida. That's where Cracked was based. I would mail a different item down to Florida every single day for a month. And it culminated, including my dirty laundry, everything. So it was as if I was moving down there, even though I was never hired. And finally, I ended up making a papier-mâché life-size mannequin of their mascot, their equivalent to Alfred E. Newman, which is Sylvester Smythe. And I made this full three-dimensional figure of him, and I put it on a plane to Florida. They went there, got the dummy, mm-hmm. and hired me that day. So they thought this guy's crazy, you know. So that's how I got my job with them. I was an associate editor for about a year with them, but in that time, they needed artists and writers badly, so I started to write and draw for them, and then eventually left as an editor and just only wrote and drew for them. And I did that for about 18 years for Crack, you know.
Great.
A lot of years.
That's in the big leagues there. Definitely in the big leagues when it comes to, you know, comics and drawing and that kind of thing. Definitely.
Well, some of those artists that we talked about, Don Martin and Jack Davis and John Severin, who is a very famous kind of comic book artist, did work for Cracked at one point or another, too. So, you know, it was not Mad's equal at all. It reached a little bit younger audience, but it gave me a great chance to kind of learn about that field and to see all that artwork in its original form, the way artists did it and sent it to Cracked. And in seeing that, you know, it changed my perspective on how to kind of draw and write for a publication, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
But I did a feature called Buys and Saboteurs, which was very much like kind of a mix of Spy versus Spy and Sergio Aragonés's Marginals, if you remember those from Med, mm-hmm. the little marginal drawings that were in Med. This is one of my all-time favorite artists, by the way, is Sergio. And he was brilliant in the way he would use the margins of the magazine and do all these things. And so my little guys were also in the margins, also in the artwork, actually, and also kind of confrontational the way Spy versus Spy was. So it was fun feature to do for them for all those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they actually made, I think on Mad TV, they had Spy versus Spy as an actual, like, you know, a cartoon. Yeah,
you know, cartoon feature, you know, on there. Sure. That's, again, you know, when you list all the famous features of Mad, that's Anthony Prohias's, and Antonio Prohias's artwork on those. It's great stuff.
Yeah, that is. That really is. I mean, yeah, awesome. So you ended up, you know, moving, you know, down here to Baltimore, working with the Sun paper for a good while.
Yeah. So what happened really there was I had left Crack. I was home and I was doing freelance work at that point, and I needed a full-time gig. So I actually got a job with American Greetings, the greeting card company, in the Highbrow studios, which was the most fun job I've ever had. You know, so I worked with about 10 or 12 other zany cartoonists in the same room, which is so fun. Because at Cracked, I only worked by myself, and I would call all these different artists and writers and work with them. But at the greeting card company, I got to work with a bunch of other cartoonists. So there was all this kind of interplay between the cartoonists. We were always sending each other cartoons, and there was, you know, crazy like things that were going on all the time in this studio. And our job really was to draw funny greeting cards and write them. But the studio itself was just the greatest. And I'm still friends with a lot of those guys that I worked with at the greeting card company. And while I was there, a year in, I got a call from the Buffalo Courier Express. They wanted to hire an artist. And, you know, I remember what my editor, Jerry DiFuccio, said from Mad Magazine, you know, you need to get on a newspaper so that you could draw more regularly to perfect your style. So I took the job in Buffalo and eventually became sports cartoonist in Buffalo, basically the sports cartoonist to Tom Tolles's editorial cartoon. So I don't know if you're familiar with Tom's work, but he just retired. He was the Washington Post editorial cartoonist for a number of years and won a Pulitzer as an editorial cartoonist for them. So and then that paper folded in 1982, and I ended up taking a job with the Baltimore News American here in Baltimore, and never thinking ever that that Baltimore was going to be a destination for me. I just had I was not an Orioles fan growing up. I didn't dislike the Orioles. I just never envisioned myself living in Baltimore, but we moved here kind of out of necessity, and it's been awesome ever since we've been here. We love Baltimore. So
I mean, there are times when, you know, when you're drawing your cartoons and having to come up with something, you know, on a very regular basis, sometimes even every day. I mean, I bet there were some times when, you know, stories and ideas just kind of fell into your lap. And then there were other times when you really had to beat your head against the wall and come up with something.
Yeah.
Did you experience, I guess, both ends of that spectrum?
Yeah. I think that's the lot, you know, that's what every cartoonist or probably writer or even your own profession. I mean, there's probably days that flow better than others. And, you know, there's, you know, you learn about deadlines and you kind of force yourself. You have to come up with an idea for a deadline. So if you don't have an inspiration, say, you got to kind of force an inspiration on yourself. I don't really have a formula for it. I just, after many, many years, I became able to kind of will an idea out there, some better than others, some that I get more excited about than others, you know what I mean? But all fun, you know, I mean, I love hard hitting cartoons as a reader. But my stuff is usually, you know, a mix of some hard hitting, but mostly fun, silly, frivolous, goofy, you know, all of that.
Sure. Had you ever taken maybe a collection of your cartoons and you know, ever wanting to put together a book? Have you
published the Sun asked me to do that. And I had reservations about it only because I just felt like because the sports cartoons I did were timely, you know, like whereas Gary Larson puts together a cartoon collection.
Right.
Those are funny all the time, you know, but with a sports cartoon, especially sports compared to editorial cartoons, because those moments are, you know, those editorial cartoons are reflecting on big moments in the news. With sports, you don't really, everyone doesn't really remember all the kind of daily sports activity that has gone on that I'm commenting on. And so I wondered how it would do as a collection, but I should have done it. I just didn't do it. Plus I'm, you know, I just big a goof off. So I missed an opportunity.
I really think that could work. Maybe if it was done locally. I mean, I can't see a Yankees fan, you know, who lives in New York getting it. But I really think, I mean, because you really did, you know, over the years, I mean, if you think about the things like Ripken's streak, playoffs, if you kept it like maybe Orioles and Ravens, you know, for an era, I'm sure you could probably put something together that would really bring back memories for people.
Yeah, I just want to share this. I don't know if you remember this, Michael, but this is, and I don't know if you can see it very good because I've got this photo. This is the thing I'm best known for in this town. In 1983, when I moved here, the Baltimore Colts moved out of town.
And oh, I'll never forget that day.
Who had just moved here. I moved here in 83. 84, I'm sorry, is when they... 84 is when this photo was taken. So 83, they moved out. 84, if I have that timeline correct, I might be wrong. In 84, I decided to make, I like these paper mache dummies that I was referring to. And I made this life-size paper mache dummy. You can Google it on your phone, anybody out there, if you really want to get a better look at it. I made this life-size paper mache dummy of Robert Irsay, the owner of the of the Colts. And he was despised in Baltimore because he moved the team out in the middle of the night, you know, by using Mayflower moving vans. And I looked at the calendar the next year and the Colts were playing, the Indianapolis Colts were playing in Philadelphia. So right up the road from us. And my wife and I went up to Philly with this life-size paper mache dummy that I made and tried to get it into Veterans Stadium. They wouldn't let us in because they were afraid. They already had 5,000 Colts fans in the stadium with, you know, Irsay sucks signs and everything else. So it was, you know, already was being disrupted by a bunch of fans and they thought this thing would be a problem. So I ended up kind of talking to the owner's daughter and they let me go up with a police escort with the dummy, my wife and I. I had to buy a scalped ticket for the dummy. They wouldn't let me in with the dummy. They insisted that it was a seat it was taking up. So I had to purchase a ticket. So I bought a ticket for the dummy. And then when we got to the top of the stairs at the upper deck, all the Colts fans were cheering and throwing things at it. And they insisted that my wife should have to sit in the seat that I purchased for the dummy, which was on the other side of the stadium. We're like, no way, you know? And so all the fans that were around us that overheard this exchange started yelling, you know, let her stay, let her stay. So, you know, they did leave her stay rather than kind of cause any problems. So yeah. And then this particular photo was on the front page of the Sun the next day, which was very funny because I worked for the News American at the time. So the competitor had my photo on the front of their paper. And it was my 15 minutes of fame. It was on the wires. It was in USA Today. It was in you know, it was in parades. The dummy was in parades in Baltimore, where people threw things at it while it was in a parade, sitting in a flatbed truck, and we had it rigged up so it would wave its arms. It was on Chris Thomas's BAL show. Chris Thomas, if you guys remember him from Baltimore, was a great sportscaster, and he used to use the dummy as he'd bring it to different places, and he'd make drunken selections for that week's games using the Ursay dummy. It was a lot of fun.
That's something else. That's so that's a real talent. I mean, that dummy looks good. I mean, it looked good.
Yeah, it's chicken wire and real paper mache, and with a lot of dollar bills stuffed in his pockets and his white buck shoes that he used to wear. So, you know, it looked a lot like Robert, you know, Ursay. Yeah. And we walked him right by his owner's box that day too, which was also funny. And the signs that we had said, "This is the real Bob Ursay. The dummy is in the owner's box." And that was our commentary.
Here's an interesting bit of trivia. I spent a lot of years of my life as a cable TV technician. And I was installing cable TV in Art Modell's gigantic house the day Robert Ursay died.
Wow, no kidding. That's very interesting trivia. Yeah, so his house here, I guess, at the time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Art Modell had a home. It was up off of 83, around the Hunt Valley area. It was like a corridor where it was really not easy to find. It wasn't well signed or anything like that. So you would pass a road, you wouldn't know it led back to this area. But a lot of Orioles and Ravens, I mean, these were just houses where, if you were in there doing a job or something, you had to leave breadcrumbs because you would get, these were like hotels. These houses are so big.
That is not the issue in my house. You're seeing my whole house, Michael, in your screen, basically. It's right, a very small house.
Same with me. I mean, you're pretty much looking at mine as well. And, that was a lot of house. That was a lot of house. That was a lot of televisions. I didn't get a chance to meet him, but I did do some work for some other, sports figures around town over the years. But
yeah, you've got the more, you've been in movies and things like that. This is basically my only real exposure, this dummy thing, with kind of any kind of public anything, because a cartoonist's life is pretty solitary, it's not a public, it's really not a public job, it's, and you're in your house. I love doing the trivia because it is so public. So it's kind of a, a departure from and very interactive with everyone. But my newspaper jobs and my magazine work is pretty much in an art studio doing that kind of work. So to get kind of reaction like I do on trivia or like I did at a stadium carrying this dummy around is really kind of a fun thing for a cartoonist, basically.
It is a lot different. It's not exactly or directly a performing art. I mean, the thing is your performance and the audience reaction is delayed. I mean, you're not getting immediate feedback, whether you're bringing the house down or you're getting booed.
Exactly.
But your audience is out there the next day. The people that live to see your cartoons in the sports page and everywhere else in the paper. I mean, there was a while, even with me, that would be the first thing I'd look for. I'd look on the front page of the sports page to see the scores. And then I'd say, all right, what did he draw today? I really enjoyed it.
Those were the days. There's no more of those days anymore, of course, because, I was doing work for, there was a time when I was doing work for the Sun and for USA Today and for the LA Times and for the Buffalo paper. And I was doing local sports cartoon. Well, except for USA Today, Baseball Weekly, I was doing local sports cartooning for all of those areas, which is crazy when you think about it, because I don't live in LA. I've never even been to LA.
Right.
But I was asked to be a cartoonist for that paper, and I would just study it and listen to LA radio, LA sports radio, say, and try and get a feel for what it was like to be a sports fan in LA, you know. And for about 5 years, I did work for them. And then all of that work, almost all at the same time, dried up about 7 years ago when newspapers just didn't have budgets for that, for something as kind of, I don't want to say frivolous, but, you know, something not as essential as a sports cartoon in a newspaper. Back in the old days, sports cartoons were essential, you know, reading. But, you know, in recent times, not essential. Most newspapers did not have a sports cartoon. So,
right. And even, you know, in the years before you came too, I can remember on the front page of the Sun, there was always a cartoon. Either the Oriole bird was in his glory or he was getting crushed under a foot or something, depending on what the score was the night before.
Right. So this is my other thing that I'm so proud of, Michael, as a sports cartoonist in Baltimore, is I'm familiar with and was a fan of all the different cartoonists, and a number of cartoonists have done that, that work, including Mike Lane, who used to be the editorial cartoonist for the Evening Sun. And he did brilliant stuff, just hysterical, underappreciated cartoonist, I think, in this town, sadly gone now. But there was a sports editor that brought it back and asked me to do that Oriole bird on the front. And I got to do it for about 3 years. And I love that so much. I just enjoyed it. I loved being part of that tradition of that with all the different cartoonists that have done it in the Sun. And I relished it. You know, I usually would hand in two versions because, you know, again, because of deadlines, I would have a cartoon of the Oriole losing and winning in some twist type of way. And then this way they could pick the cartoon the newspaper that they needed to kind of plug in there.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And in the era where I was growing up too, in the 70s and 80s, I mean, that was pretty much, I got to see the Colts the last 3 years. They were good when they were here before they went downhill. And then, of course, I grew up during the Earl Weaver Orioles era. And
I would love to have been a cartoonist during the Earl Weaver days. All I'll say, a sports cartoonist here during that time.
You would have been at no shortage for material with him, I tell you that.
I know.
Oh, gosh. I mean, and plus, too, you know, like a lot of the players back then, you know, like Lowenstein, you know, Dempsey, very, very colorful people on the team, you know?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I've read up. And by the way, I'm a huge Orioles fan now. Like, I grew up a Mets fan. I grew up a Jets fan. So, if anything, I've grown up in the counter city to Baltimore because, you know, that 1 year, 69, where the Orioles, you know, were upset by the Mets, one of the biggest baseball upsets in history. And the Colts, of course, were upset by the Jets and Joe Namath and one of the biggest football upsets. And the Knicks lost to the Bullets that year, too. It was, you know, you talk to any Baltimore fan and tell them you're from New York, they're bitter about that year. So I've flipped totally, you know, like I'm not a New York fan at all now. I am still a Buffalo fan, so I'm a Bills fan. And my wife's from Buffalo, so we're diehard Bills fans and Ravens fans. We split time there. But as a baseball fan, I'm all in on the Orioles. As bad as they are, you know, I'm a total Orioles fan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can recall the cleverness of some of those, you know, cartoons, you know, on the front page, you know, whenever, you know, the Orioles got stomped by the Tigers one time, and you just see a tiger there with like a little feather, like kind of flying, you know, coming down, or they would lose to the Indians. The Oriole bird would look like General Custer.
You didn't have a lot of space to work with. So you'd have to come up with something that would be simple and direct, but also fun, you know? So that was the challenge of doing those type of cartoons.
Oh yeah.
It's a space one.
Right. Right. And I'm sure, you know, just having the opportunity to illustrate some of the bigger, you know, more historical things, you know, like the Ravens Super Bowl, the Ripken streak,
all of those. Yeah.
All of those things.
They were great. And, you know, like, and then great characters during that time that to kind of cartoon, like of course, Robert Irsay, but also like Albert Bell was in that time, who was like just in a wacky player that we had for a while. And Marge Schott and Peter Angelos, of course, who's got his own bit of idiosyncrasies with him too. Mm-hmm. So I love drawing Peter Angelos too. So, this is a great sports town, you know, like this, people love their teams. So being a local sports cartoonist in Baltimore, you know, it was difficult when the Colts left because you had like an 11 years? I forgot.
It's 11 or 12, yeah.
Yes, 11 or 12 year gap without a football team. And I really love football for cartooning. So minus that, when the Ravens came here to town, you know, it was just a great boost for, I'm sure for writers too, but also for a sports cartoonist to have a football team here back in town.
I like the way too, how you have the ability to draw people like, you know, from a distance and then also up close too. You know, you could, you kind of do the ones where they're a little farther away are a little more caricature-ish.
Yes.
But you can draw with very good detail and look very realistic whenever you show somebody up close, you know?
Sure. And I think that's a skill that a lot of editorial cartoonists have, right? Like you get a new president and all the editorial cartoonists around the country then have to solve that, what that president looks like in cartoon form, because you're going to be using them every single day that you're drawing, almost, you know, like Joe Biden now is the new president and he's a little bit tougher to solve than Abraham Lincoln would be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Abraham Lincoln has got this very distinctive looking face. Joe Biden, it'd probably take a little bit of time to solve him facially, but cartoonists will do it. They'll mimic other cartoonists doing it. And eventually you've got a cartoon character. That was the same with the former president, with Donald Trump, with the hair and all the other stuff with him. So it's you need to learn how to do caricatures and kind of cartoon caricatures when you're doing, you know, newspaper type cartooning. And I teach a course. I teach kids at a school here at cartooning, which is a lot of fun. And, you know, we've had sessions on caricaturing and cartooning. And, you know, I try to, you know, help them through that best I can.
Right, right. Yeah, and like you were saying, too, with, you know, some of the presidential caricatures, I can remember growing up as a kid, you know, the Jimmy Carter smile was a big thing.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. You know, like that's.
And then the Richard Nixon kind of like, you know, the sunken eyes and the kind of looking down, jowly kind of look they drew with him. And
Those are classic. Those are classic solve. You know, if you look at some of the best editorial cartoons of all time, it's in that era because those two presidents were very, and Lyndon Johnson the same, you know, another guy with a very kind of distinctive, funny features in his face, you know. So so those are like cartoonist dreams. I was talking to my friend Tom Tolles, and he said that, you know, the Trump era was, you know, one of the great eras for editorial cartooning.
Oh, sure.
All the controversy involved in it and the stuff that went on every day for the material that he had basically every day there. So,
there was just there wasn't a day when the news wasn't firing up. And you know, as a cartoonist, I mean, you know, those are probably 4 years that almost just fell into your lap. You know, if you were going to retire.
When he lost, he retired. He's like, what? It's not going to be that much fun anymore.
Right. Exactly. You know, that's the thing. That's the thing. You just don't have, you know, the big personality there anymore. You know, the traits, the human foibles,
the bombastic personality, the big news that would happen every day, or the big, you know, crazy news that would happen every day, all of that, you know, it just fell into place for an editorial cartoonist, you know, during that time. So, I would have loved to have done that too, but I'm such a sports fan. Mm-hmm. So it worked out well for me to have sports as the type of thing I do work for, because I know it best. I'm a fan And I would write my cartoons from a fan perspective. So I could put the energy that I had as a fan into the cartoons. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, they were kind of sports editorial cartoons, but they were also kind of fan energy type cartoons too. So when the Ravens won that first Super Bowl, I had, you know, the type of cartoon that expressed kind of the energy that, you know, Ravens fans felt at making such a great run. And then again in 2013 or whatever that year was, that they had that crazy, ridiculous run where, you know, Flacco had this phenomenal postseason. And,
oh God.
And you know, you had the like miracle catch in Denver, and they beat the Patriots, and then the lights went out in the Super Bowl, and they, you know, almost lost it, but came back to win it. That was just a wild, you know, a wild postseason that year.
Oh, it sure was. I mean, it just seemed like during the playoff run, Flacco could do no wrong. I mean, he was just on fire the whole time.
I mean, he got his huge contract at the time because of it. You know, like he's probably never had that kind of season ever again. He just got hot at the right time, you know.
He sure did.
I mean, and he's Italian, so I love him, you know.
Hey, you can't beat that, right? You can't read that. Yeah, my wife is Italian. My wife
all
is
right.
Italian.
You married my man.
Yes, I did. It was definitely definitely a step in the right direction, I would say, you know, absolutely.
And I'm, you know, my wife is half Irish, so, and we met on St. Patrick's Day, so we always celebrate St. Patrick's Day big time in this house. And you know, I love Irish music too, so it works out. It's just our favorite holiday of the year is St. Pat's Day.
That's wonderful. I've seen that I saw your post about that on St. Patrick's Day, and I also saw she's included in a couple of your caricatures when you have the trivia over at the you did the you had her in a caricature when you were doing like a Riverdance type of cartoon.
Yes,
you drew the other day.
She's in that drawing. Yes, I can draw my wife as easily as I, you know, draw myself or, you know, my family. I've solved them years ago, basically. But yeah, no, it's a fun way I draw Terry, and it's affectionate too. I don't really make fun of her. It's just the way I draw her.
Sure. Absolutely. I've really been enjoying being a Facebook friend of yours, you know, not only because you're a good guy and I've been enjoying speaking to you now, getting to know you, but the one thing that I've really enjoyed has been a feature that you have on your Facebook page. It's really not a special page. It's your own page, and you have it. It's called Toon Trivia.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So I've always liked trivia, you know, and I was a big fan. I don't know if we're a fan of Phil Wood, but he was a sportscaster in this area, and he used to do trivia on his shows and stuff, and I've always enjoyed it. So on Facebook, I never had anything that interesting to post, but I started doing these little trivia questions or whatever on there, and then gradually I started doing it on a regular basis, and it would be really basic things like, you know, post famous people whose last names ends in a Z or something, you know, and people would post all day on it, you know, and it's like, it's the type of thing that's easy for people to kind of think of it, but also it became, you know, a place for people to go and, you know, applaud each other for doing it using the like buttons on Facebook or whatever. And I would, the way I would do it is I'd use a funny cartoon, or I'd create a funny cartoon to kind of head up the trivia question and then go from there. And I've been doing it for quite a long time now, probably at least 10 years, probably longer, maybe a dozen years. And I actually tried to syndicate it, and I did syndicate it at a place called Go Comics, which is a national cartooning house for this. They liked the feature. They had never done a trivia feature, and it was very popular when it was on there, but it made me no money whatsoever.
right.
And I wasn't allowed to do what I do now on Facebook with it. I couldn't really post photos on it. There was no like buttons or dislike buttons. You know, the things that Facebook offers that feature that GoComics didn't it wasn't worth it for me to kind of continue there. So I brought it back to Facebook just as kind of a fun thing to do. And I'm so glad you enjoy it. I know a lot of other people enjoy it. I enjoy kind of coming up with these, you know, ridiculous questions each time. Some of them would be, an example would be like, you know, the Marx Brothers are, you know, Groucho, Chico, Harpo, Zeppo, and Gummo. Think of, you know, other Marx Brothers. So people would just come up with other goofy names that ended in O, of course, and then tell what that particular Marx Brother. So it could be like Dumbo, you know, the Marx Brother that did this or whatever. And that kind of thing, plus regular questions. I try to mix it up. There's a little geography in there. There's some sports. But mostly I try not to make it sports heavy because a lot of the people that play are not intense sports fans. So occasionally I'll do a sports one in there and really make a lot of them about, you know, letters in the alphabet and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
I'm glad that you're doing that because, you know, I have to say these past 4 years, you know, I don't think in a lot of ways the country and, you know, all of us have been ourselves. Yeah. Especially when you look on social media. I mean, people have just gotten to be downright vicious.
Yes.
And, you know, nobody can, you know, post any kind of an opinion or anything anywhere on something like that without being torn to shreds by somebody. And the thing I really enjoy about it is that it, to me, it almost feels like, you know, you're going to Mike Resigliano's block party, you know, or
sweet of you to say, I've never,
you know, people are joining in, way,
but it's such a nice compliment. And I appreciate that very much, Michael.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, and you're welcome. You know, and what I want to say about this, you know, more is that, you know, you see people, you make a fun topic. Everybody throws, you know, a few answers in and everything. And once in a while, there may be a little political rumbling from an answer that somebody gives, but it doesn't get vicious on your page.
I try to diffuse it if it can. Yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of some zingers myself, I have to admit. If it just flows into the flow of the cartoon, I've been known to throw them in there occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Right, but right.
If it gets out of hand or if it gets to the point where that's just kind of dominating the conversation in it, then, you know, I try to diffuse that because that is not the, you know, that's not what that feature is there for. It is for just to have fun and to kind of, you know, it's been a great distraction during COVID for a lot of people who are just kind of stuck in their houses, you know, doing, you know, watching TV. So it's something different to do during the day for them. And again, I think a lot of these people have gotten to know each other and become Facebook friends with each other because they're all part of this Toon Trivia faithful, as I call them, you know, the people that play that game on a very regular basis.
And kind of where I was going with this too, like what you were saying was like, you know, you don't see all over these discussions, you Democrat this or you Republican that and this, you know, ripping each other up. You see, good answer, I love that, or I didn't think of that one, or hey, I was just getting ready to say that, you beat me to it, good job.
Right.
And then likes and smiles and like the little laughing icon and everything too is what you see on these. And like I say, I feel like it's, you know, it's Mike's neighborhood block party, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
you know, the neighbors.
It's what we strive for anyway. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, but I strive. I'm a game guy since I was little. I love games. I love board games. I love, you know, and I love thinking of games, you know, so that's where, you know, I wake up in the morning and I'll say, well, what can I do today? That would be, you know, that's something I haven't done. A lot of stuff is stuff that I have done, but I mean, and try and come up with a little bit of a new twist or relate it to the holiday that it is that day or relate it to some news item that I can kind of do a twist on that for the game. So it would be better if I could make money from doing it. If you ever
everything think of a way is.
I can do that, let me know, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Everything is. I mean, you know, it's
short of that. I'm happy to kind of do it as part of my daily routine. And it's a wonderful way, even though it's not in person, to socialize with a lot of great people, you know, on Facebook on a daily basis, which is cool.
It is. It is. Well, that's great. Like I said, you know, I think you're really doing a great thing there, and I appreciate seeing it every day. It's something I'm glad you've been sharing with the rest of us.
So one other thing that we've started doing during COVID is we started doing like a Tune Trivia Live is what we called it. And you've seen that promoed, I'm sure, on my page. And yeah. It's what's been great about it is my family is who does it. Basically, Terry co-hosts it with me, and my two boys, you know, who are, you know, now 39 and 37, I guess. One guy's the tech guy who basically set the whole thing up. The other guy's the scorekeeper. And so it's a family thing for us. And we do this kind of trivia bar game, you know, periodically, and we raise money for charity, which is awesome, you know. So
wonderful.
It's been fun. We haven't done it as much lately because everyone's lives have been busy, but occasionally we break it out, and everyone seems to have a great time on it, and we raise some bucks. And most importantly for me and for Terry, you know, we get to be with our boys virtually and have a good time with them and do something as a family, which is really fun.
Great, great, great. So I guess, you know, one last thing I'd like to ask you, a lot of people have, loved your cartoons over the years in the paper and everything. Have you ever gotten any like really nice compliments from anybody that you drew?
All the time.
Terry just yelled all the time. I would say no.
All the time.
No, huh?
I've done many, 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 many retirement cartoons and, you know, wedding champagne bottle labels. And, you know, I've done a lot of custom work that is over the years for friends, some for commission, but mostly for friends. And I have always gotten great compliments from that. On the flip side of that, I have heard from a few athletes who did not like the cartoons.
Oh, really?
I did of them. And that, you know, that's always been interesting. So I had a few of those over the years. I never have had to confront one in person. I'll give you one quick story. Ken Rosenthal, who you're probably familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Was a very good writer for the paper and who is on, I think it's Fox TV now as a reporter on air. His first job at the Sun, his first day at the Sun, he had to go into the Orioles locker room. And I had done a cartoon about Eddie Murray, about how he never got his uniform dirty. You know, that was the big thing about Eddie, was he was such a great player, but he never really dove for balls or anything. And so Eddie Murray, the first day Ken Rosenthal got into the locker room, Eddie Murray put him up against the locker. Little Ken Rosenthal, and said, "Who is that guy that did that cartoon? What's the deal there?" And he came back to my desk, introduced himself, and told me that story. I just laughed. I thought it was so funny. And I said, "Thank you for taking the hit for me, Ken."
Oh, Jesus. I was getting ready to say, it's a good thing he did go, I guess, huh?
Oh, no, I love Eddie Murray. I think he's
a
spectacular player, and I just think that particular cartoon got under his skin. And I know I've done my share of those that have gotten under athletes' skins. That's my job, though. You know, my job is to, A, create a little controversy, B, to kind of tell it like it is in cartoon form, you know, for a sports fan, basically. So so that means I did my job well if something like that happened.
right. Well, Mike, I really want to thank you for spending time with us here this evening. I've really enjoyed this. You know, I've been looking forward to speaking with you for a good while now. And at this point in the show, I'd like to allow people to, this is shameless plug time. You can shamelessly plug anything as shamelessly as you would like to, with no shamelessness spared.
Is that me? Oh, that's somebody on your show for plugging something.
I allow my guests to shamelessly plug. Well, so that
I would say that, you know, if you love playing trivia, get on Facebook and, you know, friend me on Michael Resigliano, and you could play trivia along with us. It doesn't cost you any money. I want to plug the fact that we are going to be grandparents within this week of twin boys. We've never been grandparents before, so Terry and I are extremely excited. And, you know, beyond that, I'm basically in my retirement time right now, so I have no other things to plug, but I'm still always trying to have fun, and that's, you know, I plan to do that even when I'm, during retirement years.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, congratulations again on the grandchildren. I'm sure you probably have some junior drawing kits picked out at the store for them already.
I would never recommend this as a profession for my grandchildren. I hope they become doctors or presidents or whatever. But, you know, for me, it's been a great career. I've really enjoyed it. And I don't know that I would be very good at anything else. So,
well. Well, thank you again for all the laughs and all the memories over the years. Like I said, I've really enjoyed reading your cartoons, and they put a smile on my face many a time. So thank you. Thank you for the memories, Michael.
Thanks for the conversation. You're such a fun guy to talk to. Thanks again, Michael.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening. This is Mike Risigliano on Foul Players Radio, and we'll see you all next time.